sound.
Two guys with no credentials.
Reviewing Rolling Stone
500 greatest album.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for joining us again here on the Sound Logic podcast, where today we're discussing album number 104 on Rolling Stone magazine's top 500 greatest album list. This is Sticky Fingers by the Rolling Stones.
Mike, we're not talking about 2023's Hackney Diamonds.
No, we're not. Should we be? I mean, yes, I've definitely listened to it. What did you think of it?
Well, I was chuckling to myself when I saw that for those, I don't know, completist record collectors out there, they have the unfortunate task of having to buy over 30 copies of this because they have a partnership with Major League Baseball, and they did a cover, a different cover for every baseball team.
No.
For Hackney Diamonds. So you can get a Toronto Blue Jays Hackney Diamonds album cover, which is just, I don't know, kind of preposterous in my mind.
Stop it.
I will say that made me laugh out loud and then made me go click on it in Spotify. And it's actually surprisingly good for some really old dudes who are still rocking. It is very produced, and it's an interesting contrast to what we're about to talk about here tonight, to have kind of a stripped down classic rock album to compare it to. I think I'm glad that we're talking tonight about Sticky Fingers and not about Hackney Diamonds. Yeah.
Well, and I don't want to talk about Hackney Diamonds too much, but I heard the first single and it's just nothing really grabbed me, and
a little cutter.
I thought mixed voice sound very heavily produced. Sounds kind of strange, yes, to me.
A little bit of auto-tune I felt in there,
oh,
too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, listen. Don't get me wrong. It's absolutely incredible that these guys are still making music. They still love it. Yeah. They're still able. Like, a lot of bands can't go on. I mean, look at, you know, one of our favorite bands, Rush, or mine, anyways. Like, they stopped touring because Neil couldn't do anymore, and then he got sick, he passed away. Yeah. And even I was talking to a friend today that when they talked about doing their last tour, Alex Lifeson was going to take a year off because his hands were starting to hurt. Starting to get arthritis.
Right. Yep.
And it wasn't until they found out that Neil wasn't doing well, they were like, and his feet were really sore.
Yep.
That he decided, yeah, we better do this now. like so that these guys can still do this is just absolutely incredible. You know, I can't imagine, like, you have sung, Ben, I've sung a bit, my wife has sung, we've sung in choirs, my daughter is wanting to get into it professionally, and the amount of training, can you imagine singing like every day for 70 years? Like the fact that he can even speak is frankly a miracle. It's just incredible. So what they've done is amazing. I love the track? No, I didn't love the track. I haven't listened to the album. And yeah, hey, maybe I'll listen to it and feel like you're like, hey, not bad, you know, but like, it's amazing. It's just amazing. Yep. Even when we saw them, Ben, and I guess we'll talk about this, when we saw them in 2003, it was kind of like, well, pretty cool. We get to see these guys who've been around for 40
years.
On
their last legs.
Yeah, we're like, yeah, probably not going to see these guys for much longer. I mean, Charlie's gone, but
yeah,
they're still going. So, anyways,
for tricking along.
Enough about Hackney Diamonds. I guess we should talk about
the real reason
sticky
we're here.
Fingers.
Yeah. Let's dive right into some details, or we're going to get sidetracked.
Details,
again.
So we don't get sidetracked. Yeah. Okay. Sticky Fingers released 23rd of April 1971. I do want to make a comment before we start. We talked about kind of this grouping of four albums, and I don't know if I'll get in the right order. Let It Bleed, Beggar's Banquet, Sticky Fingers, and Exile on Main Street. I think it's in that order, actually. I might have mixed up the first two, but that's kind of considered this group, this four of their best albums in consecutive releasing, kind of the height,
pinnacle of their careers.
Well, I guess that would be a little bit maybe controversial, but certainly that was like just a well, you know, they've had other amazing albums too, right? And other amazing songs, but right. This was kind of a grouping of four. There was some of their best work, all consecutive in a very short span, right? In like less than 4 years.
Yep. Which like we've already reviewed. A couple of them.
Yeah, this
least.
Is the last
Beggar's Banquet, Exile, and Let It Bleed. So, yeah,
we have. So this is the last one of those four for us to review, and I think this was the third that got released.
We've not been too kind to them.
I like fair? Let It Bleed.
Okay,
it's all very subjective. All those words you're using: kind, fair. I liked Let It Bleed. I didn't much care for Beggar's Bank, Beggar's Bank was okay. I didn't much care for Exile.
Just too long.
And I think I said way too many songs. Way too many songs. Anyways, we're not talking about those albums. On Sticky Fingers, all tracks written by Jagger and Richards, except Sister Morphine, which is co-written by Marianne Faithfull. And You Gotta Move, written by Fred McDowell and Gary Davis. I don't think he was a Mennonite. We know a lot of Mennonite McDowells. charted number one, went to number one in Australia, Belgium, Canada, Holland, Finland, Germany, Norway, Spain, Sweden, and the UK and the US. So very, very successful. Certified 3.5 million, lower than I would expect, especially considering the album is a bit of a collector's item, like the sleeve. We'll get to that in a minute. Singles were Brown Sugar and Wild Horses. This is the first studio album, so maybe I got my order wrong, the first studio album without Brian Jones, so who had died 2 years earlier. So I think he recorded a bit on the first one of those four, which I think was Let It Bleed. And then he was kind of ushered out of the band. He had some reliability issues, some substance abuse issues, and he passed away before that was released. So he's been gone. It features some guest musicians, Bobby Keys on sax, Billy Preston on organ. If you've seen, Billy Preston, an incredible keyboardist and recording artist in his own right. But if you've seen the Beatles Get Back documentary, is that what it was called? Get Back.
Yep.
He featured very prominently on those recording sessions and kind of was, as they said, kind of the key ingredient for them to really be re-inspired to make music.
Right.
On that track in particular, and another, he features very heavily on those albums, being Let It Be and Abbey Road. And also Jim Dickinson, who I believe is a famous piano player and is also the father of Luther and Cody Dickinson of the North Mississippi All-Stars, who we've seen together. It was the band's first album to reach number one on both the UK and US album charts. And this album is inducted into the Grammy Hall of Fame. Very, very famous, well-received album with lots of guest artists, and lots going on, and lots of good tracks. So here's where we get to talk about one of the most iconic album covers of all time. Am I Am I out of line in saying that?
I don't think so.
No, good.
I would say it's an album cover with a lot of mystique for how unique it is. It's not necessarily the image. Well, I don't know. Maybe the image has part of it too. But it's the zipper. It's this functioning metal zipper that was on the cover, and similar to Velvet Underground.
Yes.
And Nico with the banana sticker that you had the temptation of whether or not to peel it off to see what was underneath. You have this choice of, do you unzip the zipper?
Unzip the zipper.
And so, yeah, I think there's some mystique around this cover that is somewhat different than a traditional flat, non-3D cover.
Yeah, so the artwork. Okay, so I'll describe it as I like to do. It's a picture, just a pretty much your standard crotch shot. kind of from belt down to just above the knees of someone wearing a pair of jeans with the belt.
And it is just someone. There's been speculation that it's Mick, but it's, I think he has said it's not him. It was a group of models that were brought in to do the shoot.
Yeah, the lighting makes it look like there could be a bit of an ambiguous lump or bulge on the on the side there. But you know, again, that's ambiguous. Almost like it looks like a rubber stamp on the side, you know, with an outline like a stamp you would get. The Rolling Stone Sticky Fingers kind of stamped on the side of this thing.
Sure.
Almost like, you know, assembly line kind of thing. Conceived by Andy Warhol and photographed and designed by members of his art collective, The Factory. So the cover was expensive to produce. Because not only had the zipper, but behind the zipper, there's like a flap, and you can open it up. And what is behind the zipper is underwear fabric under there. So the later issues just featured just the photograph. Now, I have a copy that I found at a thrift store. The disc is in very, very poor condition. I can't even really listen to it. I've listened to it like once or twice. And it's awful, so it's poor. The zipper, there is a zipper. It doesn't work anymore. It's kind of corroded.
Okay.
But I can fold it back, and there's nothing back there.
Oh, someone stole the underwear.
Well, actually, I'm pulling it back. I can see a picture of the underwear and kind of a naked torso and legs. And the Andy Warhol stamp there, but no fabric. So sometimes what happens is when it's made in other countries internationally, I'll say, because Canada is international as compared, and this is printed in Canada, manufactured and distributed by Warner Brothers Records of Canada, sometimes that happens. So I don't know if this came out, if this copy that I have was also printed in 71, or if this was later, I don't know. It doesn't say. I could probably look up the actual code and it would tell me. But I found this one. I looked at the disc, saw that it was damaged, but thought, you know what? I just kind of want to have this. Yeah, it's not. I'm looking at the disc now. It's really, really poorly damaged.
And I think that was a thing, right? The zipper, as it turns out, created a pretty big lump, which meant that there was some warping, some buckling in the initial shipments. And there's some funny quotes where Mick, I guess, has a light bulb moment where he says, can we just pull the zipper down so that it's resting closer to the label in the middle of the record and not in the tracks? Because I guess there were a couple of songs that were just almost unlistenable because of the way that the the zipper was resting when it was fully pulled up. They had these poor assembly line ladies, as they're putting everything together, unzip the pants to try and keep the records from getting destroyed in shipping.
So if it does press, it's just on the label.
Yeah.
right. not in the groups. Wow, that
right. he,
a pretty good solution there from Mick, I'd say, being a logistics guy. That's a great solution. Low cost. Just these different creative albums over the years you get from time to time are really interesting. But they do create, you know, I think it's a bit of a collector's item if you have one with a working zipper. Like mine
right.
is not working. I could probably loosen it up with a bit of WD-40, but anything else about the cover?
If you visit the Wikipedia page for this album, you can see a Spanish issue cover that is completely different. I don't know what they are. Oh, I guess Sticky Fingers. It's a can of some like saucy looking, I don't know, disembodied hand fingers. Jeez. Sticking out of the top of the can. It looks really gross. This is another one that gets a very different look depending on where in the world it was released.
Right.
I have no idea if it had to do with the sensitivity of the market. We don't want a crotch shot on our music stands, so we're going to come up with something else. So this is, at least in Spain, there was a different cover for this one.
This is the first time that we see the Tongue and Lips logo, the very famous Rolling Stones logo that we kind of imagine has been around forever. It wasn't around forever, and this is the first time. So it's on the back, and at least on my copy, it's printed on the label on the disc. And apparently this was the first time that it appeared, just like a little, I don't know, like a little watermark almost. It was designed by John Pasche, P-A-S-C-H-E, don't know how to say that, in 1970. Jagger suggested to him that he copy the outstuck tongue of the Hindu goddess Kali. I think that's Kali pronounced that way. He felt that this would date the image to the Indian culture craze of the 60s. We saw that with some of the Beatles. But when he saw a picture of the goddess, it changed his mind. So before the end of the year, the version was faxed to another guy, and the black and white copy was modified, and then resulted in what we have today, the red version.
Amazing. Yeah. It's
kind
amazing.
Of interesting, I know that it stuck, you know?
Yeah. I know the Stones have a million records, but that it took them until, what is this, like 10th album? Ninth British release and 11th American studio album. So it took them some time to come to this iconic, what is now synonymous and almost like a Nike swoosh, like I think globally known as this sort of trademark of this this icon.
Yeah, really, really, really interesting. We didn't talk about the back of the cover, which is just the back of the model.
Oh, all right. Yeah.
There's nothing on it. Just some, you know, some real important trademark and date addresses and stuff on, and just a butt with a pair of jeans on it. So here you go. That's the cover. Again, I think one of the most recognizable and iconic and collectible covers ever. So that's, I think that
pretty cool.
I think that adds to an album, because having the music be great is one thing, but if you have something that compels people to get the album before they've even heard the music, I mean, that you've really got something special. And I think even today people would pick this up because it's iconic, even if they don't know the sound. I'm guessing.
I think that's right. And I think, like, kudos, I guess, to Andy Warhol again, elevating something beyond. Because really, it is a fairly basic picture, some jeans. I'm thinking, too, if like format changes over the years, this on a CD is not terribly compelling, right? Shrunk down, no zipper, black and white image. Not much that pulls you in. But when it is blown up to that 12 by 12 size with the shiny metal there, and it really does suddenly transform it to something. Oh, I got to check out what this is.
Yeah, really interesting. You ready to move on here?
Yeah.
Okay, so 10, very standard 10 tracks.
With a 7-minute track jumping out there.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes me think the rest of the songs, I guess, are just a little bit shorter. It's not like the rest are all really. There is a couple other five. Oh, there's three 5-minute songs too. So it's interesting how are split up there.
I think it still comes in at what, around 40, 45 minutes? So it's not a ridiculously long album.
Right.
But, you know, the songs, in my opinion, are pretty good, and they're memorable and they're catchy.
Yep.
The opposite to what is my opinion of Exile on Main Street, where there's a lot of songs, but they really don't jump out to me.
Yes.
There weren't many that I really found to be catchy. This one opens up with, Brown Sugar and Wild Horses. Have I told you my Wild Horses story?
I don't think so.
So I worked at a chicken and deli counter, Reese's Chicken and Deli, at the York Farmers Market at Yonge Street. Yonge and, I guess, 14th is closest. Early university. And I worked there we had a wonderful manager named Shirley. And she's about the age of my parents, her daughters worked there who were about my age. So we would listen to the radio. One day, Wild Horses came on, and she was walking by me. She said, "Oh, Mike, I'll have to tell you a story about this song." and I was very intrigued, but we were busy. I said, "Okay." So I think about it from time to time, and then heard it again. And I said, "Shirley, you'll have to tell me about this. You said you had a story." "Oh, right. Yes, I'll have to tell you." She didn't tell me. And then, so again, it was, months or maybe a year later. Finally, we were working one night, and finally I remembered. I said, "Oh, just, we're not too busy. You had told me that you had this story about Wild Horse." She said, "Yeah." She said, "Well, years ago, my brother-in-law had passed away very tragically, and they played Rolling Stones' Wild Horses at his funeral. And I think about him every time this song's on." I was like, kind of expecting something maybe a little more dramatic.
Right.
At the same time, was like, well, it's not the first thing that would come to mind to play at someone's, but it's just, again, the power of one, good songwriting, but also the power of a song attached to a moment to draw your attention to someone special or a special or difficult time. So I still think about that when I hear it, all kind of because of the story, and it was touching, but also because of how kind of it was like this thing that was like, I was so intrigued by it, just someone saying this song is important to me. And it is one of those, like, the Stones don't have a ton of ballads, right? Or like, not
right.
Radio, like, this was a single, and it's like a really beautiful song. Just something that's just always stuck to me. Kind of a funny little story, nothing groundbreaking, but yeah. just a really neat moment. And then of course it takes me back to just my time being there and working with a wonderful person and other memories there. So that's my Wild Horses story. I don't have any stories about any of these other songs. Thanks for joining us. just kidding.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Like a lot of episodes in this chunk here, it's taken us a while to get to it, and so we've texted a few times about it, and I've sensed that you enjoy this album, teetering on really appreciating it, not just
I mean for so many years I really very much dismissed the Stones as, you know, they're overplayed, it's not that good, it's just generic rock and roll. And, you know, it has been hard to kind of break free from that mentality wherever it came from.
Yeah.
It's been good for me to, for us doing this project and listening to just a handful of their many albums, but also learning about, as we're doing this, learning about other albums that they've done as it's relevant to our discussions about the album that we're reviewing at the time. And I just found these songs very catchy. I really like just coming to my notes here. I really love the arrangements. There's lots of great orchestration. I love, there's different, a lot of different instruments. So I love there's lots of great saxophone, organ, piano, beautiful string arrangements. And I felt that the songs in general was a really good blend. I felt, I'll use Exile again, I felt was kind of a lot of very same. These songs, it's a blend of rock, of blues,
yeah,
honk, and ballads. It's very, yeah, soulful ballads. So I just felt it was a diverse album, a catchy album. One that, although there were some familiar songs, other songs weren't familiar that I enjoyed. Sister Morphine, I know, is a name that I've heard, but didn't know the song. But again, it's a bit of a grittier kind of thing. Dead Flowers, kind of a jaunty, funny, kind of sarcastic little thing. Like, just, it was good. I liked it. I enjoyed it. Yeah. This is one, I would listen to this again for sure. Like it was something I enjoyed. And for all the kind of less than kind things we said about the Stones, I did like this one.
It strikes me that they seem really comfortable in their skin in this album. Like they sort of, yep, zeroed in on what they do well. It's not all, like, I think we've criticized them a little for everything sounds kind of the same. It's all 4/4 timing and standard, yeah, classic rock, but they're playing around with some of those things. There's little bit more variance between the songs here, and because it's only 10 tracks, I think I don't get tired of it in the same way that, you know, whatever it is, that 20 track Exile marathon to get through. There's some good attitude here as well that I think the Stones are known for, but I like the way that it's present here. Can You Hear Me Knocking and Brown Sugar, and even Bitch too, the sixth track, I think has some of that, the best of Mick Swagger, I guess I would say, where it doesn't feel performative or contrived or anything like that. It just feels like he's being himself. And,
right.
And I like that about it too. I do still at times, in as much as I've enjoyed this one comparatively to the other three, I don't know. Sometimes Charlie's drumming, rest in peace, just seems a little bit too simple and sometimes not always on the mark. Huh. And I don't know. Maybe that's nitpicky, but I think there sometimes that swagger that they have starts to feel a little sloppy around the edges. Mick's voice too, I think sometimes gets him into sort of Dylan-like territory where it's not so much about hitting the notes as the emotion that he conveys. And I just don't like that as much as some people do. There's still some issues here, but I would certainly be in the same camp as you in that this one is by far my favorite that we've tackled so far from the Stones.
Cool. I'm glad we both I'm glad we both agree on that.
It is the fourth in these four, right? The final of those four. And so I don't know, maybe we have felt them building to this. Maybe we can see sort of where they're coming from to get to this point. I know we've both admitted that one of the best things about being on this journey is sort of seeing the steps or influences that lead from one album to another, and not even from the same artist, but you know, the way that the Pet Sounds inspires the Beatles, you know, those sorts of things are really, I think, add a depth to the music. And I'm wondering, I guess, in this journey, if we're sort of understanding Sticky Fingers a little bit more, knowing what led up to it.
Yep. No, that makes sense. I mean, it kind of goes without saying, but the more you learn about anything, hopefully the more you appreciate about it, or at least understand it a little better. Yeah, no, absolutely. Sorry, I was just thinking about something else. Do you want to pick our favorite tracks?
Sure.
Spotify playlist. If you're new to this, we have a Spotify playlist called Sound Logic Favorites, where we pick two tracks from each album we've reviewed. Quite a lot of tracks on there now. It's quite an eclectic mix. If you're just looking for something different, you get every genre except for country, maybe. Do you have a favorite, Ben?
Why don't you go first? I've got a couple that I'm kind of torn between.
Uh-oh. Oh, man. I really enjoyed a lot of these. I found Dead Flowers very catchy. It's kind of silly. Wild Horses is beautiful. I'm having a hard time. So I'm just going to pick Brown Sugar.
Okay.
great song. Like, great song.
Yeah. Great opener, too.
Oh, great opener. Great opener to an album. Yeah.
Setting the stage for an album.
And I think it represents kind of, like I said, I love an opener, which kind of says, you know, here's a representation of a lot of what you're going to hear. Or, you know, if it's not kind of just that one that just kind of grabs you, which this does well, I think this does represent a lot of the different things we're going to hear, and introduces those elements. So yeah, Brown Sugar, Can't You Hear Me Knocking, it's also one I really like.
I can't believe it, since it is the longest track, but I think that's my choice.
Really?
I think it could be shorter, but I really like that Can You Hear Me Knocking riff. The way the guitar plays with the voice is, I don't know, it's really neat and probably the one that stands out to me. Mm-hmm. I knew Brown Sugar and Wild Horses before listening to this, but I probably had heard Can You Hear Me Knocking, but
yeah, I've definitely heard that.
It's the one that rises up for me beyond those two.
Awesome. Yep. Very cool. Any other comments on the music, Ben?
The no, I think I'm good. I think I'm feeling pretty satisfied with our conversation so far.
Yeah, me too. We're doing great. What has aged well and what hasn't?
There's still an attitude here that is contagious. And the way that Brown Sugar sets the table and opens up immediately draws you in. That song, it'll continue to be played for decades, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. There's something about the slow rock ballads that are present here that I think don't age well. Maybe because when Mick tries to be a Sinatra crooner,
he
you see the shortcomings in his voice, maybe, at least for me. And maybe that's when I noticed the drumming just a little bit too lax as well. I don't know. These are kind of nitpicky things, but those are the things that probably stand out to me as stuff that hasn't aged terribly well. How about you?
Well, I do want to comment on what you said about the drumming, and Charlie was known for being very simplistic in his playing.
Yes.
And not in a negative, I don't mean that negatively. Very simplistic, very good. He was traditionally a jazz drummer, preferred a jazz kit, but his kit was very stripped down. He didn't have the big, all the different cymbals and the big rows of toms. You know, he didn't need that. And I could see how there could be times where, especially as we get into the mid-70s, where, you know, rock and hard rock and these big, you know, like think about Mick Fleetwood playing the drums, you know, and then get into guys like Neil Peart and other things. These then, of course, getting into the glam rock of the 80s, big drum sounds, you know. Of course, John Bonham, just a heavy, heavy hitter. This is a very, very different style.
Yep.
I think that maybe that is something that hasn't aged well as the drumming has changed. That being said, and as much as we've talked, you know, again, maybe not so favorably about the Stones, there is something, listening to this, there's something very timeless about all of this that I think it does. You can listen to this and tell what decade it came from, for sure. Mm-hmm. But there's something that's still very relevant today, very, very straight up, good rock songs. And as I said, I love the diversity. It's not just, you know, bass, drums, and guitar. There's other things happening here. Beautiful piano, like Wild Horses, the piano is just gorgeous. You know, just really, really, that stuff is still relevant. It may be done in a different way, maybe produced a different way today, but it's still, I I've said many times with these albums in the 60s and 70s, the production value a lot of times doesn't age well, but they were limited to what they had in terms of production equipment. It's actually not that bad on this. It's pretty good. A lot of this stuff's remastered now, but it was pretty good. I think in terms of aging, we've certainly listened to stuff that was, you know, huge at the time that today is like, you know, this doesn't really work anymore. But no, this is good. I think this is aged quite nicely, like the boys themselves are like a fine like a fine wine, just simmering away in the
tanning bed.
Still
have the moves like Jagger.
Oh my gosh, I can shake it. How about the position? So we're at 104. We didn't quite get to this one last time. This came last time, 64. And that was just about when the new list came out and we started over. I think we got to 60 or 61.
60. Yep.
And we never did release 61. So we were just about to listen to this. And then we started over. So 104, what do you think?
I'm baffled by this. And maybe this is an episode we should have had a real Stones fan for, because I want to hear some rationale for why this one that we both like so much more than the other three in this sort of pinnacle of their career gets put, fourth. I mean, I guess in this new list, it is actually third, and we'll talk about the way that they've been shuffled a little bit. But to have Exile still up there at 14 and Let It Bleed at 41, I don't know. I would prefer this one to be in place of either of those. And so I'm a little bit surprised to see it here, for their longevity, their influence, there are lots of reasons to continue to appreciate what Stones have done, even if they, you know, did borrow from, Black Rock and Roll and, make it palatable for a white audience. I still think there's something credible about the Stones and what they did, and I guess I'm surprised that it's here. I don't know. What about you?
It's tough because a group that's had so many albums and it's been so influential, you get the sense that on the previous versions of this list, they were here because it's the Stones. And because, you know, the Beatles are here because it's the Beatles, and they just slotted them all in. I don't want to jump ahead, but we'll see that a lot of their albums have been removed from this list. No longer are on this. So, again, I ask, is it here because it was a significant album for many people, or because it's been a part of the zeitgeist and was included for that reason? One that we enjoy, I mean, I guess it's just two of us, would it be a little higher? But I don't know. Why this one less or more than other Stones albums? I don't know. I can't answer that. I think it should be represented here. I think that it's definitely, you know, one of the better ones. I got that order a little messed up earlier when I was talking. This was the third of those four. So it was Beggars in 68, Let It Bleed in 69, Sticky Figures in 71, and then Exile in 72, which is, I guess, kind of typically their most acclaimed of the four is Exile. Mm-hmm. But why is this one? I don't quite understand them. The order, but no, it's fine here. I mean, we've talked about how many other albums came into the list in the top 100 that weren't in before, were very low. Changing of the guard in terms of, you know, diversity and representation, so that's obviously going to push a number of things down, so this just kind of happens. But it's fine. I don't think I'd put it top 50, but I don't need to see it, you know, down below like 300 or 400, right? Like, it's fine. So yeah, I'm okay with it. Not too, you know, I don't really have much of an opinion,
it's,
I guess.
In the correct spot.
That's perfect. It's just absolutely perfect. It's perfect. Okay. So other albums, we've talked about Exile was 14, Let It Bleed was 41, all fell down a little bit. Sticky Fingers was 64, down to 104, and Beggar's Banquet, we've already reviewed, it was number 58, now is 185, so that one dropped way down.
We'll get there in a few years.
Yeah, and then 1966's Aftermath was 109, now is 330. And then 1978, Some Girls, was 270, and now is 468. So there's six albums. There were 10 albums. Four of them were on the last version of the list and are not on. So that's Out of Our Heads and The Rolling Stones Now, both from 65. 67's Between the Buttons, and from 1981, Tattoo You. Which we think, one of their later albums, but that contains the classic song Start Me Up, which I always kind of assumed was a kind of an early Stone song, but no, they did it almost 20 years into their career. Start Me Up has become kind of a
restart their careers,
an anthem, anthemic kind of song for them. So anyways, there you go. Was 10 down to 6, but we've got three more, one we've already reviewed, to go on the list.
Well, we made it through another one, Mike.
We made it. I'm yawning a lot, but it's not because I felt that our conversation or the content therein was boring.
We have been a little bit too busy here over these last few months, and we appreciate you putting up with the delay in getting to some of these.
Another one coming up, one we've already reviewed, coming up next week. What would you want to give us a little preview of what that is, Ben?
Yeah, one of the few times that we have looked at a live album mm-hmm. these lists. We're going to be revisiting at number 105 at Fillmore East by the Allman Brothers Band. One that I'm almost sure I said I need to spend a bit more time with at the end of that review, and I have not spent any time with it, so maybe I better hurry up and do
that.
You
better do that, yeah. Looking forward to that. Until that time, we hope you continue to be well. We hope you take care of yourselves and those around you, those important to you. And of course, we really hope that you'll join us again right here on the Sound Logic Podcast. Thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll talk to you next time.
Sweet.
If you like what you hear, subscribe on your favorite podcast app and write a review.
Send us a message at our Facebook page, on Instagram, or through our SoundLogic Podcast Twitter feed. Thanks for listening.